Using statistics to lie is made easy with this informational read by Daryl Huff. Today, we will be discussing the intro and the first three chapters of this book. Inside, the code of lying is cracked using the simplest of statistics strategies. Let's begin. Hello, this is Victoria.
Nick.
Sean.
Shannon.
And for our quarter four benchmark, we are discovering how to interpret data using the power of statistics. With that being said, we read, discussed, and analyzed the best-selling novel, How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff. This is what it's about.
So, in the introduction, they spoke about murder cases in newspapers, and they talked about how news companies put more murder cases on the first couple pages of the newspaper to make it show more murders happen in a city. What do you guys think about that?
That seems, it works really well, but it's kind of like obvious that they do that. It's just me.
I personally think, yeah, like Shannon said, it works. And if you want to get somebody's attention about something as bad as a bunch of murders in a town, then you should obviously try and put it out there as much as you can by exploiting it in the first three pages, because as we all know, you only read about the first three pages of the newspaper anyway.
Yep.
Well, there's nothing wrong with them doing this, because in the intro it says it misleads and it cannot depend on you, so you can't really get in trouble for doing something like that. It's like subliminal.
It still like takes away from like other news stories that are really like good stories or anything like that.
Especially if it's a lie, like not saying that, you know, they're lying about people being murdered, but they might be drumming up the data and they might be falsifying it or taking it on a larger scale.
So let's say there were 10 murders in a month.
Right.
And for that month, every week they broadcasted two murders on each page, on the front two pages.
Right.
So if let's say there was fundraisers going on for them entire months, but they put them on the very last page, would that have changed the outlook on it? What if they put the fundraiser on the first page instead of last?
Then people would be paying more attention to the fundraiser than they would be to the murders. But people seem to like more morbid things in their newspapers.
Yeah, people are attracted to drama. But, like, I do understand what you're saying, because, again, it's all about the front page. That's why when you see, like, sports stories, how they have the big color picture. Everything else is in black and white, but the color picture with the big impact font so that you can look. So when there's, like, three children dead on the front of a newspaper, your first response is, whoa, let me read that. What is that about? Let me care.
So,
well, maybe they do that, like, in the hopes that when you read that, you want to, like, see if there's more interesting stuff. But since they put everything, like, in the beginning and everyone knows that happens in the beginning, it might, like, might not help them as much as they would hope for.
I was about to say, actually, is with the way that they broadcast it, do you think they're actually trying to get people to react to it? Like, oh, I want to join a town watch trying to stop murders.
I think they're trying, they might have good intentions for it, aside from just getting their money from making people pay for a newspaper. But it's still like, it's still lying with statistics, even though people still don't like pay attention.
Yeah, I think there is some good intention, because the point of the newspaper is to inform the public about everything that's going on. So it's basically a good thing, but at the same time, yeah, they're trying to make their money. And especially if newspapers aren't doing too well these days because of all the technology we have at our fingertips, then they're going to drum up as much as they can.
So you think that they're doing this to make money overall, but they're still trying to inform the public about everything?
Yep, I think that's exactly what's going on. They care, but you know, at the end of the day, they still want to maintain their company and make a profit and pay all their employees. So at the end of the day, I would say that money is more important than what the public cares about.
Yeah, it is all about the money.
So money is power.
Yep. Always has been.
Okay, let's move on. In chapter one, it talked about a college that said that the average student who graduates makes $25,111 a year. And that seems a little too precise, right, guys?
Yeah, that was way too accurate.
I feel about this that they're using a sample from people that they can actually get to tell them their actual price. So if you're a big millionaire from going to their college, you're not going to worry about coming back or telling them how much you actually make. Or if you're poor, you might be too prideful to say it.
I'm just like, I make like 2 cents an hour. I'm a taxi driver, but I'm not going to tell you that.
I don't think, I don't think that they got a big enough sample. And I don't think it seems to me like they might have even only measured one class of students from the college. I think that they need to broaden their sample before they make wide claims as that, because I know for sure that when you come out of college, some of the statistics prove that you make over 40 grand a year. So it's really confusing when you only use one small group or one small population from a sample.
Okay, well, what kind of samples would you guys use?
I would say take, 10 students from each major that they offer and see if that changes their sample size.
I kind of think it was intentional, though, because if you think about it, again, like the newspapers, a college is a business. If they want to attract more people to their school, they want to make it seem like they're better than everyone else.
Right, but 25 grand a
year. It does seem.
That's not that great.
Yeah.
I think it was back in the day, but that's still like not that much.
I mean, yeah, back in the day probably, but I think that
when like something costs like 5 cents.
Yeah. What I would do is I would tweak Sean's idea. So yeah, we have 10 students from every major, but I would do it for the past 10 years and compare each and every single basically data point and see how it changes over the years, and then make a general assumption of whether or not that's a good statistic or not.
Yeah.
Well, do you think all sample sizes would have some human error, even if you don't want it to?
Of course.
Yeah.
Because what if the person that you send the letter to asking for their monthly income lies? Like, they make $5,000 a month, and they don't want to tell anyone that, so they say, yeah, I make $10,000 a month.
Yeah, besides, do you know how many times in one of our math problems I miscounted the data?
Right. It happens. And human error includes lying. It's not, like, always an accident. Sometimes we just don't tell the truth, which is a very human thing. So, definitely, there's always human error.
Well, do you trust samples enough to get your data?
You have to make a bigger sample to make up for the fact that some people might be lying.
I would not trust a sample unless I could get all the data in front of me and even go to extremes as to have some people on lie detectors to see if they're actually lying about their
That's a bit
income.
Much.
Yeah, that's a little extreme, but I wouldn't trust just one sample of data. I mean, we've done so much work in class where we'd be a fool to only trust one sample of data or only trust one trial.
Especially when we did that project where we did the measuring of months. One person measured in inches, one person measured an infant, and you had to go through and fix everything so that it didn't get messed up.
Wow.
So, do you think of any other way to get the data besides samples?
Maybe make it a requirement at your college that they send back in maybe like a yearly income.
They should send in their actual pay stub, like the legit thing.
Just so they can touch base with their college professors or anything.
I don't think any of that's legal.
Maybe instead of making them send back their records and stuff, maybe just like ask the best students, because even if you have only the best year of that class, sending back their records that they might be proud of, then that's still technically lying with statistics, but you're only asking the best because you only care about the best.
Well, going back to what Nick asked, you said, is there any other way of getting data without collecting a sample? And I feel like all data is in sample form, and you can't really not collect data without having a sample. They're like, they go hand in hand. You can't collect data without having a sample. And I don't think you should collect data without having a sample.
You just need a little bit more than just one sample.
Right.
To make sure that you get the correct answer.
Right.
All right, what do you think the correct size would be for this? For the entire class?
I would say try and get to the closest amount of the entire class.
Yeah, or you could do the method that Sean said before, where you do 10 students from each major, and then you can tack on my idea from the past 5 years or so. And that's a really big sample. And then you'd be able to trust the data because you have a spectrum of numbers, and any individual person might be able to fall within those categories, within the samples.
Even if they fall in outliers, but they're easier to find.
Right.